This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For the full show and archives, visit jodcast.net.
The night sky for September 2014. Well, at least you don't have to stay up quite so late to see a dark sky when there's no moon. And that's a great help. I've been staying up to 2 o'clock some nights in June and July to get a point when it's really dark. Well, what do we see? Well, for quite a few months in a row, actually, we have what is called the summer triangle, fairly high in the south. That's made up of three bright stars. The highest one is Vega, in the little constellation of Lyra the Lyre. Over to its left is Deneb, the brightest star in Cygnus the Swan. And below them is Altair, which is in Aquila the Eagle. Looking up at Deneb, you'll actually see three stars in a line to its lower right. And then, if it's really dark, a couple of further stars away from Deneb. And those actually make up what's called the Northern Cross. I was in the Mid Wales the other night, and in fact it showed up really rather well. But you do have to be in a dark location, particularly to see the stars down at the very tip of the bottom of the cross, or it's actually the head of the Swan. It's a lovely star called Albireo, and in a small telescope, it shows up as a beautiful double star with a lovely contrast, almost a gold and a blue of the two stars you see. And again, with binoculars, just over to the left of Vega, you may spot a double star, two stars close together. It's in fact Epsilon Lyra. It's called the double-double because each of those stars is itself a double star, and they can be seen when the seeing is good with a small telescope. Down to the lower left of the summer triangle is a little constellation called Delphinus the Dolphin, which I rather like. Below there, it's a fairly empty part of the sky. It's the constellations of Aquarius and Capricornus. But then rising in the east as the evening moves on, we have the great square of Pegasus, the winged horse, which actually is upside down. Again with binoculars, if you follow around the arc of its head and carry on a bit, you come to what's called a globular cluster. It's a very ancient grouping of stars, perhaps up to a million in number, called M15. And again, from the top left corner of the square, you can fairly easily find the Andromeda Galaxy. You move one star up and to the left a bit, move round 20, 30 degrees to the next bright star, then turn sharp right, 90 degrees right, move to a small, fairly bright star, the same distance again, you may see a fuzzy glow. And that's one of the ways of finding Andromeda, M31. It's the largest galaxy in our local group of galaxies. We're number two. It's probably 25 to 30% bigger than us. The other way to find it is up to the right, towards the north from Pegasus, is the W-shaped constellation of Cassiopeia. And if you actually take the three stars nearest the zenith, the higher three, use them as a little arrow, that actually points down to Andromeda as well. And finally, again as the evening draws on, just beneath Cassiopeia towards the northeast is the constellation of Perseus. And between the two constellations, actually in Perseus, there's a lovely grouping of stars called the Double Cluster, two very close open clusters of young stars that you can see as a little fuzzy glow in binoculars, and it looks beautiful in a telescope. So anyway, I hope you enjoy looking up at the sky. Well, it's not the greatest month for planets, but what can we tell about the planets in September? Jupiter, which is shining at magnitude minus 1.8, begins the month just about 2.5 degrees to the lower left of M44, which is the Beehive Cluster, or Prisipi, in Cancer. It's moving down towards Leo, which it will reach in the middle of October. At the start of September, it rises 2.5 hours before the Sun. Actually, rather nicely, this increases to 4.5 hours by month's end. So you do have a chance of seeing it when it's still pretty dark. As the Earth, in its orbit around the Sun, is moving towards Jupiter, the size of Jupiter's disk increases slightly from 32.1 to 33.6 arc seconds. So early risers should be able to see the equatorial bands in the atmosphere and up to the four Galilean moons as they weave their way around it. At the other end of the day, Saturn can be seen after sunset, low in the southwest. It's lying in Libra, moving slowly away from the wide double star Alpha Librae, as it shines with a magnitude of plus 0.6. 1 hour after sunset at the start of the month, it'll be 20 degrees above the horizon, so our view will be limited somewhat of its 16 arc-second disk. However, by the end of September, it'll only be about 10 degrees elevation at this time. Probably this month is our last chance to observe it for a while, when it will then appear, having passed behind the sun, in the morning sky. The ring system has now opened up to 23 degrees to the line of sight, so that should still show nicely, and with a reasonable-sized telescope, you should also be able to spot Titan, its largest satellite. Mercury has a very poor evening apparition this month. Though it is at greatest elongation, which is 26 degrees east of the sun on September the 21st, the elevation will be very low, because at this time of the year, the ecliptic makes a very shallow angle to the horizon. Probably best to find it on the 20th, given a clear night and a low western horizon. Note where the sun sets, and only then you can use binoculars to sweep about 25 degrees to the left of that point, and perhaps 5 to 10 degrees above the horizon. You might then spot Mercury. It's in the constellation Virgo at magnitude 0, which could be seen just half a degree below first magnitude Spica, which is Alpha Virginis. Mars has been visible for quite a while in the evening because it's moving quite quickly eastwards. It moves from Libra into Scorpius, ending the month close to Antares, that's that lovely red star. It dims from plus 0.6 to plus 0.8 during the month, and obviously at the same time its disk is falling from 6.8 down to 6.1 arc seconds. Obviously it's best to observe it as soon as darkness falls, but given its low elevation, it's unlikely you'll see any details on its salmon pink surface. On the 12th, it will lie halfway between Saturn and Antares, and on the 17th will lie just half a degree above the second magnitude star, Delta Scorpii. And finally, Venus. Well, this is still a morning star. It rises in the east-northeast in the pre-dawn sky an hour before the sun. That actually reduces to half an hour by the end of the month, so again it's best to try and look for it early on in September. Shining at magnitude minus 3.9, it can be spotted in Leo, well down to the lower left of Jupiter, as the month begins. On the 5th and 6th, it'll be just a degree above on the 5th, and then to the left on the 6th, of the first magnitude star, Regulus Alpha Leonis. Well, what about some highlights of the month? Well, there's nothing particularly spectacular, to be honest. It's still a good month to observe Neptune with binoculars or a small telescope. It came into opposition, that means it's nearest to the Earth, on the 29th of August, so will be seen well this month. Has a magnitude of plus 7.9, so it should be spotted easily with binoculars, lying in the constellation Aquarius, but of course you need to know where to look. And on the Night Sky page, just search for Night Sky, perhaps with Jodrell Bank, I actually give a chart showing how to find it. It rises to an elevation of about 27 degrees when it's due south. Given a telescope of 8 or more inches in aperture and a dark, transparent night, you should even be able to spot its moon Triton. As I've briefly mentioned, on September the 5th, half an hour before sunrise, Venus is very close to Regulus in Leo. In fact, 1 degree virtually, to be precise, 59 minutes and 46 arc seconds to the upper left of Regulus. Nice to look at. On September the 5th, an hour after sunset, Antares, Mars and Saturn lie in the southwest. You need a good, low, unobstructed horizon. But looking southwest, you should see Mars, magnitude 0.6, lying between Antares, magnitude 0.9 to its left, and Saturn, magnitude 0.6, lying to its right. On the 20th of September, before dawn, Jupiter will be quite close, 6 degrees in fact, up and to the left of a thin crescent moon. On September the 27th and 28th, after sunset, you can see Saturn, Mars and the thin crescent moon. On the 27th, the crescent moon will be lying down to the right of Saturn in Libra. On the next night, a fuller crescent moon will lie halfway between Mars and Saturn. And on both these nights, Mars will be lying just over 3 degrees above Antares in Scorpius. Finally, I do have on the night sky page every month something to look at on the moon. This month, I've got what's called the Alpine Valley. It's close to the limb on the 2nd and the 14th of the month. Those are good evenings to look for it. It lies in the Apennine mountain chain that marks the edge of Mare Imbrium. If you look at that with a telescope, towards the upper end, you should see the cleft across them called the Alpine Valley. Of course, that's with a telescope that inverts the image. It's about 7 miles wide and 79 miles long. A thin rill runs along its length, which is quite a challenge to observe. And you can, in fact, see the night after the 2nd, perhaps on the 3rd and 4th, the dark crater Plato and the young crater Copernicus coming into view. It's a very interesting region of the moon. I do hope you have a chance to spot some of these things during the month.
Thanks for that, Ian. And now, presenting the southern night sky is Claire Bretherton.
Kia ora and welcome to the September Jodcast from Carter Observatory in Wellington, New Zealand. September marks the start of the spring here in the southern hemisphere. As we head towards the spring equinox on the 23rd of the month, we see a rapid change in our daylight hours, with our days getting longer and our nights shorter. Equinox means equal night, because we have the same number of hours of daylight and the same number of hours of darkness at this time of year. The bright stars Vega and Canopus mark north-south around dusk this month, guiding our eye to the bright band of the Milky Way passing high overhead. Along with the nearby bright stars of Deneb in Cygnus the Swan and Altair in Aquila the Eagle, Vega forms part of the winter triangle, as seen here in the southern hemisphere. Between Vega and Altair is Alboreo, or the Beak Star, marking the head of the Swan. This is a double star and a lovely sight in a small telescope because of the easily seen contrasting colour between blue and gold components. Our winter constellations of Scorpius and Sagittarius are slowly sliding down towards our western horizon and will be setting by around midnight as Orion rises opposite in the east. Following behind Sagittarius are the fainter zodiac constellations of Capricornus, Aquarius and Pisces, visible in the evening sky. Capricorn is the second faintest zodiacal constellation following Cancer and appears as an elongated triangle resembling a pennant with the tip facing away from Sagittarius. A small triangular grouping of stars marks the goat's head and horns. Capricorn means the goat horn, and it is often represented as a mythical half-goat, half-fish creature. At magnitude 2.8, the brightest star in the constellation is unusually designated Delta Capricorni, and is also known as Deneb al-Jedi, meaning the tail of the goat. This star is an eclipsing binary, meaning that the orbital plane of the two components is aligned so that they eclipse each other from our line of sight. This causes a dip in brightness of up to 0.24 magnitudes. The system has two additional faint companion stars, bringing the total count to 4. Alpha Capricorni is another double star, which can easily be split with binoculars and can even be distinguished with the naked eye. It is commonly known as Algiadi, meaning the kid. Although these stars appear close together, their proximity is just a line of sight effect, with primary and secondary components positioned at 109 and 690 light years respectively. Both are in fact multiple star systems in their own right. Capricornus is just one of a number of watery themed constellations in this part of the sky, which has been associated with the time of the Northern Hemisphere autumn and winter rains. To the southeast of Capricornus is the faint constellation of Pisces Austrinus, the southern fish, with its only bright star Fomalhaut marking the mouth of the fish. Fomalhaut has been the subject of some controversy over the past few years. In 2008, astronomers Callas and Graham identified a massive planet orbiting the star. But what was really exciting about this detection was that this planet, called Fomalhaut B, was the first to be discovered by direct imaging, appearing as a small cluster of pixels in images from the Hubble Space Telescope. Follow-up observations, however, failed to find the planet and left many to doubt its existence. It wasn't until 2012 that Fomalhaut B was independently detected and confirmed by Thane Curry at the University of Toronto, and then by Gallagher and Moroy in 2013. Its controversial past has earned it the nickname the Zombie Planet, a planet resurrected from the dead. Stretching between Fomalhaut in the east and Alta in the north is a long string of stars that forms the zodiac constellation of Aquarius, the water bearer. There are a number of deep sky objects in this constellation that are worth hunting down. M2 is a lovely globular cluster, nearby to third magnitude star Beta Aquarii. With a magnitude of 6.3, M2 is a difficult naked eye object, so it's a good challenge for those with clear dark skies and good eyesight. It is easily visible in binoculars as a hazy star, and with a 20-centimeter telescope, a few individual stars can be resolved. M2 is around 37,500 light-years away, and with a diameter of 175 light-years and around 150,000 members, it is one of the larger globular clusters known. The stars in the cluster have been dated to approximately 13 billion years, some of the oldest known in our galaxy. To the southwest of Delta Aquarii is NGC 7293, the Helix Nebula, one of the largest and closest bright planetary nebulae to our solar system, at 700 light-years away. Similar in appearance to the Cat's Eye and Ring Nebulae, NGC 7293 is visible in binoculars as a hazy circular spot. In small telescopes, you may be able to see it as a circle with a dark center, whilst larger telescopes will reveal more detail. To reveal the colours of the nebula, though, a long exposure photograph is needed. Other watery constellations in this part of the sky include Pisces the fish, Cetus the whale, and Delphinus the dolphin. Turning our attention to the western sky, Mars and Saturn remain close together around halfway up our northwestern evening sky at the beginning of the month, and will be joined by a lovely crescent moon on the 1st. While Saturn continues its slow slide towards the western horizon, Mars, with its much closer orbit, continues to move eastwards against the background stars, passing close to Antares by the end of the month. The name Antares means rival to Mars because of its orangey-red colour, and this close encounter will be a great opportunity to compare the two. Mercury also makes an appearance in our evening skies this month, its best of the year. Because it moves on an inner orbit, Mercury never gets far from the Sun in our sky, appearing low on the horizon at either dusk or dawn. This month it reaches its greatest eastern elongation on the 22nd, joining Mars and Saturn in our western sky after dark. It will make a close pairing with Spica in the constellation of Virgo on the 20th. The Moon will also move through this planetary triplet over the last few days of the month. Jupiter shines brightly in the northeast in our morning sky, rising around an hour and a half before the Sun by mid-month. With a small telescope or a good pair of binoculars, its four largest moons can easily be seen. Look out for the last of three perigee moons on the 9th of September. Often known as a supermoon, this is when the Moon's full phase coincides with the closest point in its orbit around Earth, appearing slightly larger and brighter in the sky. Thanks for listening to our Jodcast from the Southern Hemisphere, wishing you clear skies from the team here at Carter Observatory.